This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:06 on the evening edition with Kelvin and Hezriel. Before the 7 p.m. news, we were talking about ways to deal with drunk driving. Do we need new laws? What kind of new ideas can we explore? We'll get to those, and plenty of you have sent in ideas. We'll get to those in just a moment. But for now, our next story, we're talking about the roles that communities play in fighting COVID-19. Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin recently posted on his Facebook page that a campaign to empower communities is under works as the government plans an exit strategy from the CMCO for the country.
Yeah, and so the idea of community-led prevention has been brought up a few times. Health DG, Dr. Noor Hisham Abdullah, a month ago, brought up examples of how community leaders in Sarawak longhouses prevented the spread of COVID-19 by stopping high-risk people from entering their areas. The DG also cited groups like residents' associations and how they can join in the fight too.
Yeah, so this idea of community kind of works in many circumstances, right? Looking at how America's Center for Disease Control and Prevention kind of thinks about the idea of communities, right? List the different kinds like business and workplaces, faith-based organizations, tribal communities. So I guess what this means is that coming up with sort of different initiatives for different communities spearheaded by leaders within those communities. So I guess this makes sense, right? Since they'll know what works best and what doesn't for those under their care.
Right, and I think it makes sense to include as many different organizations as possible across the spectrum, right? Because some people might be more in touch with their local church or mosque, while other people may be more involved in their residence association. So certainly I think it's important to involve as many avenues as possible so that as many people can be involved on the individual level.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited to see how each community, you know, if actually empowered, and how each community would choose to play around with the policies, play around with the SOPs, and then the creative ideas that might come from that, right? But I think what I also hope to see is a sort of check that would prevent instances of racism that might hurt more vulnerable communities. You know, we sometimes see banners going up saying like this place does not allow certain races to stay, certain non-Malaysians to stay, and then that's usually under the guise of, well, we just want to protect the communities.
Right.
That's under the guise of, well, there are some members of this community that don't feel safe with this particular kind of person around. So I'm hoping there will be checks for that, you know, because if it doesn't exist, then we could actually be harming minority groups here.
For sure. And I think on that note, it's also about making sure that it's not about just raising awareness, but making sure that everyone has the equipment to protect themselves, right? To have access to masks and sanitizers, and for the government and the private sector to come together to make sure that people who can't afford them are given them for as long as this thing exists.
We're now going to cross over to Jeffrey Pang, founder and chairman of MyPJ, a community organization among residents and stakeholders in Petaling Jaya. Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we've heard this term community empowerment coming from the DG for quite some time and now from political leaders. How do you understand this phrase and what it might mean on an individual level?
Yeah, actually it's quite basic. Community empowerment can actually be defined as helping communities to help themselves. And this is where when the government have power, they should delegate or share power from above, that is from the state, the local authorities, to the grassroots, so that they are able to take care of themselves. So when we say helping communities to help themselves, sometimes people just say, oh, yeah, it's the same as, no, don't give a person a fish, but no, help teach them how to fish. But sometimes it's a bit simplistic when you say that, because you teach them how to fish, but you leave them on dry land with no rivers running by, that is not helping them as well. So I think trying to empower communities has got a deeper meaning. For example, not as an individual, if I am to be empowered, I would like to know that, you know, under a pandemic or other economic shocks, we and our community can look after ourselves individually. So, for example, in the urban area, in a B40 flat, if there are space for a community garden, then when there's any break in the supply chain, like what we have seen recently, then we are able to fend for ourselves, not through the community garden. So this empowerment actually comes together with providing the right resource that they can look after themselves.
And what kind of support has the government offered to communities and community associations like yours to fight the virus?
When this pandemic actually occurred, we have a reactionary support. Not quite understandable because the country had never faced a global pandemic before. So the government, which has just came into power, had to react as best as they can. So we found a lot of NGOs rushing in to fill the vacuum. And that is where they start distributing food. But then the discoordination came in. The JKM said that, you cannot distribute food. And everything got a bit confused. So the other thing is, because everybody working in silos and trying to be helpful, we found that the elected representatives, like the MPs, the councillors, the ADUNs, they were all distributing in silos. There was no cross-checking. And we find that some families are getting it two or three times, while some did not receive at all. So in terms of support, right now it is very reactionary. But from this experience, we can have a planned support and where we can distribute food in a more impactful manner. And that would mean actually having to get everyone ready in the value chain. For example, in PJ, our local council have a food bank. But during the pandemic, how is their food bank integrating with the NGOs and working through the community leaders to distribute it? So it was not very well planned. So I think from now on, based after this experience, we should be sitting down to sort of discuss this in a more coordinated fashion. So coincidentally, the MP office just called me up just 2 hours ago, calling for a meeting where all NGOs and stakeholders that are involved with food distribution will sit down to sort out a proper system for coordinating. So I think support from the government has been reactionary, but from now on, it should be a bit more planned. So recently, Selangor State Government has also approved a project that will be tried out in Desa Mentari and PPR Kota Damansara, where we will use a mobile app and it will be able to verify the identity of the individual household. And with a database, donors will not be confused whether we are overgiving to one community or missing out on some communities.
Right. So hearing that the central theme there seems to be communication. And on that note, actually, how can community leaders or associations ensure that correct information is given about COVID-19, and why is this important?
Oh, that is a very difficult question to answer. Just during the time, everybody was so confused with the overabundance of information on the WhatsApp. I think there are some ministers who quoted wrongly and got a lashback as well. So for us community leaders to be able to ensure that the correct information is given, the federal government should have, probably set up by the health ministry, a place where they can siphon and filter all this WhatsApp news, and any fake news, they should sort of publish it out. So there is one central source of authority that will tell us whether it's facts or is it fake news.
And what kinds of questions have you heard from members of your own community? And, with that, what kind of fake news have you had to address so far?
Oh, I think one of them is the drinking hot water. The other one is, in fact, they wanted to set up a sort of screening cubicle where you get screened and at the same time get disinfected. So later on, it was proved that it is wrong as well. So these are some of those fake news that is so prevalent. But what we have implemented is a simple washing of hands. So we put in a basin in some of the blocks, and they just wash their hands before they go up. So I think this information can be quite confusing sometimes.
Right. And have you observed communities or neighborhoods working together to address the issue of COVID-19? And what has that looked like? I know earlier you drew experiences from food aid distribution. Have you seen anything else of this sort?
Yeah. We were quite lucky because we were working with the Desa Mentari community for the last 3 years. And we have actually built up strategically who are the leaders, what are the problems they have. I think in the terms of empowering a community, we find that one of the difficult things is communities are very disorganized. So before you can empower them, you have to make sure that their unity is there. And most of the time, they have got conflicting groups there with different leaders. So getting them to move correctly is very difficult. Fortunately, we know the community quite well. And during this time, when there was lockdown, as NGOs, we can't even go down to serve them. But because of technology, we are able to work with the leaders. The donors come through us, and then we buy the food from the stores nearby. The leaders will go to the store, pick it up, go to their hall, and divide it up. And then after that, we just distribute out and ask the flat owners or the unit, people that are deserving, to just come down and collect. So in that way, there's plenty of social distancing. We don't get exposed. And at the same time, they were quite organized as well. They have got a spreadsheet that tells us exactly who have received from who, and that helps us a lot. So I think all these things has happened because we have built up a good relationship with them, and they can actually act on their own. So because of this, we can actually move on quite easily and quickly.
Right. And one of the aspects of all this is community surveillance. So how does this work?
I think earlier on, before COVID, if you start to tell or report on anybody, people will get very angry with you. because that's really a busybody. But now COVID-19 has completely changed the attitude of people. I was quite surprised because hygiene has always been a problem in B40 areas. But during this COVID-19, they were all quite serious and quite scared about the virus. They stayed among themselves, and they actually were very cooperative in that sense. So in terms of civilians, you will notice that they would be on guard with people exposing themselves or gathering in a group, or they are not wearing masks, and they have got no hesitation to tell the people off now, because now they realize that individual reluctance or negligence can affect the mass majority. So yes, when it comes to civilians now, they are looking out for each other right now.
Which is quite interesting, right? Because I guess overall, there's just been a lot of talk around trying to ensure that we collectively have social responsibility to one another, to try to keep each other safe, which of course includes sometimes asking people to wear masks when they're outside. Do you think this social responsibility, this aspect of it, is that something you think has been communicated well? What else can we be doing to get this message across?
Yes, I think on the community level, they all have to be responsible for their own behavior. Last time, it was a bit different. They do things according to what suits them. But now, with this COVID-19, things are different. But when you talk about corporate or social responsibility, there's quite a lot of social responsibility, not only among the community. But this social responsibility actually empower the communities. But how it is carried out is one thing. So I like to emphasize about corporate social responsibility for one thing. You will find that a lot of companies have been helping out on food aid during this COVID-19. And we have got one corporate that we work with, Deloitte, their auditors. And for 4 years, they've been working with us on corporate social responsibility on ad hoc basis. Once a year, they will come to do some Gondor Royong. But after that, in 2019, they started to provide tuition classes on a weekly basis, and that helped us a lot. But hardly about 6 months later, COVID struck, right? And now we are changing to online tuition, and this time they are providing tablets to, you know, the B40 kids and other corporates that Yeo Tiong Lei will come in to provide the data. So corporate social responsibility, when it is taken at a strategic level, it helps a lot. And especially when there's a partnership, a trusted partnership. So empowering the communities becomes so much easier when this support system of a partnership with the corporates are there. On another level, we have got a government. And it's hard to say whether government is doing CSR, because their work is actually mainly CSR.
Yeah.
Their job is to make sure that there's an impact on the poor, and things like food bank that they're doing are all part of the CSR. But is the government getting it right? Is the PPTs getting it right? Are they doing a job, or are they looking for the impact? You know? So I think this is a big room of improvement, whereby the working attitude of the PPTs have now to be aligned to the needs of the people. So I think this is one area. The other thing is the state can also empower the communities by helping PBTs to increase public participation, transparent budgeting, open data. Because many a times in the B40 communities, they want to do something, but there's no open data. There's no data available. So they're unable to do very much. So I think this is where, you know, the state can set an ecosystem whereby, you know, people can perform the CSR better. And then lastly, on the federal level, talking of social responsibility, looking out for each other, the GLCs themselves is very well resourced, but they have got to move from profit maximization to maximizing social good, identifying ventures that provide both social good and profits as well. So in a way, COVID-19 now has tried to shift everything away from just exploitation, but right now it's balancing, you know, the good of the society together with sustainability through profits.
Geoffrey, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Okay, thank you.
That was Geoffrey Pang, founder and chairman of MyPJ, talking to us about community empowerment and how that might help in the fight against COVID-19. We are going to look at some of the ideas and messages that we've gotten about several things, you know, including dealing with wedding vendors as well as drunk driving. So make sure you can, if you have more ideas, you can keep them coming through. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some music coming up. It's Fats Domino with Ain't That a Shame. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.